Right, let's focus. By the way, in that Newsmaker of the Day slot, let me just tell you, also COVID-19 related, some suggestions that incentivize men to go for vaccines. Strong pushback from many people saying this actually will compound the problem. Dr. Tlaleng Mofokeng is renowned for her insights into public health. She's our guest coming up in about an hour's time. But let's get into the Johnson & Johnson story that I spoke about earlier. The New York Times has written a story in which they talk about how the overwhelming majority of the vials of vaccine that were actually partially produced in South Africa have not been distributed either in this country or in other parts of the African continent. It's been sold on and delivered to either Europe or the United States. It's raised many questions about an agreement that South Africa concluded with Johnson & Johnson in regard to vaccine procurement. And one of the organizations criticizing that agreement is the Health Justice Initiative. Its founder, Fatima Hassan, joins us on 702 Drive. Ms. Hassan, welcome and thanks very much for your time. What do you think is fundamentally wrong with the agreement that South Africa made with Johnson & Johnson, given that I would have thought the amount of leverage they had in the conversation would have been limited?
Thanks, John. And I think you're right. The leverage is limited, and we have a situation which we believe is quite perilous and actually quite scandalous, where Johnson & Johnson forced the South African government, and that much has been admitted by government to the New York Times, to basically sign a contract which required the South African government in its own contract for 31 million vaccines to provide a blanket waiver on any export restrictions or export bans or limitations for its bigger contract that it has with Aspen. And that the contract with Aspen, which is meant to provide at least 220 million vaccines to the African Union, also then includes supplies for other parts of the world. And what was happening was that that waiver was being used as a basis to export at least 32 million fill and finished vaccines from South Africa to parts of Europe for several months while we were waiting for vaccines, and the AU is still waiting for vaccines. So what Johnson & Johnson has done is it leveraged the need and the demand from the South African government for vaccines, particularly as we were going into wave three, and this was already being negotiated from February onwards, to basically leverage its ability to be able to provide the vaccines for other parts of the world, including customers that we consider priority customers, and it does presumably as well, customers which have high vaccination rates, which is the reason why we believe, according to the Africa Union, that of the 220 million promised for Africa for this year, remember, there was a lot of fanfare. Only 1.3 million, John, has been delivered, we believe, of that particular contract, while 32 million has already gone out. Gordon Brown has said in a blog for The Guardian, reported in Politico, that another 10 million is about to leave in the next few weeks or has been leaving for Europe as well. While South Africa's, of our contract of 32 million, we haven't even received about 10 million of that. So, it's a really, really troubling situation.
Is this not the reality, though, of a world in which, for example, Johnson & Johnson, I think, got $1.454 billion in U.S. government funding that, who pays the piper and so on and so on?
Well, so what has happened is that the EU and the U.S. were certainly not asked to give such waivers, and they themselves imposed export bans and export restrictions. You'll remember that India faced quite a devastating wave, so they, in turn, their own government imposed an export ban. So what has happened here is, the contract with the South African government basically gives Johnson & Johnson free rein to do whatever it wants to in relation to its contract with Aspen. Now, there's two reasons why this is concerning, not just because of what has happened in the past and, we were waiting for vaccines at that time. And remember, our program got delayed because the J&J supplies were not coming in, is that there has been talk that Aspen will get a full manufacturing license. And if that is the case, and as Johnson & Johnson still has this waiver in relation to exports, then it will still be in control. It will determine who needs supplies when and where. And, just as I was getting on to this interview, the World Health Organization, DG, has just issued a press statement, and he's basically calling on J&J to urgently reprioritize distribution of vaccines to Africa, because the concern is that in Africa, it's less than 2% of people vaccinated. I mean, he himself has used the word stunned. He's saying that he was stunned by the news that vaccines that were being filled in Phoenicia were actually being exported to parts of Europe.
So the undertakings, I mean, I'm just working off this New York Times story, but the undertakings down the line is that this is going to change, that the doses delivered to the African continent, those numbers are going to increase. Stephen Saad, Aspen's chief executive, quoted as saying he would have liked to see it all go to Africa, but everybody's saying that balance is going to shift.
Well, you know, this is what we warned about in 2020, the so-called gentleman's agreement that they have in place about the 60-40 split for Europe and for Africa. We don't know when that will change. If you have a provision in a contract which allows you to do this, you can reverse that at any point. The gentleman's agreement is not enforceable. And if Europe decides that it needs its boosters or it wants to, you know, use more of its vaccines for a donation program or whatever it wants to do, the way in which the contract is designed and the way in which you've limited the rights of the South African government means that Johnson & Johnson can do whatever it wants to at any given point, which is exactly what it's doing right now. There have been all these vaccines. What has it sent to the African Union? 1.3 million.
Yeah. So in terms of negotiations then, I mean, how does the balance of negotiating power shift? And I'm not thinking just of South Africa, Ms. Hassan, but more generally the developing world and the countries, as you rightly highlight, in Africa, but probably elsewhere as well, in the global south where vaccination dose numbers are lower than they should be. What changes that? Because there's lobbying on a multilateral level. There are people like Gordon Brown stepping forward. Some people might say it would have been better if he'd done it when he was in a more powerful position in government, but that's the way these things often work. How does this shift? Is there sufficient critical mass to force pharmaceutical companies, in your view, to do anything differently soon?
So I think it's a great question, because it goes to the asymmetry of our relationships and what we've been warning about in this pandemic, that pharmaceutical companies are acting like God, that they have too much power in this pandemic. So we're certainly not the only country that has been, in my view, bullied into a corner. And, you know, the spokesperson for the Department of Health said we were told sign the contract or no vaccine. So there's obviously, you know, a power relationship and an imbalance that is happening, and you've got to try and address that. How we address that, where you hold private companies to account in many parts of the world, is obviously different. In some parts of the world, organizations and activists have already asked for the disclosure of the contracts or are trying to revise them. We're doing something similar here in South Africa. But how you force a company to act morally, how you force a company to change its behavior and change its prioritization allocations can only happen by global pressure and bad publicity. And with the World Health Organization, DG, coming out quite strongly today, urging Johnson & Johnson to do that, one would hope that would happen. We have a great constitution. We will try and make sure that the provisions in the contract that undermine, you know, certain constitutional provisions are changed, but not every country can do that. So at the heart of what we've seen, I think, in this pandemic, is the way in which we believe pharmaceutical companies use their power and their IP claims to basically, you know, extract certain concessions from many democratic governments. And the irony is that these companies will be the first one to tell you about the rule of law, but act in a way which is actually not very transparent. I mean, there's another provision in that contract.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there because we've covered quite a lot of that. But there are many issues that Fatima Hassan, just to thank her, joining us from the Health Justice Initiative. The issues that she's raised, I mean, some people might say this is Johnson & Johnson's vaccine. They've developed it. They've invested in it. The US government has invested in it. And that is the nature of business. Other people would say in a global pandemic, the normal rules of business don't apply and should not apply. And the South African government should have been more robust in their engagement on this. What's your view? Give us a call. 011-883-0702. There are compelling arguments that both sides make. Which one persuades you the most?